Good morning. Welcome to the Roundtable. I'm Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. 11 minutes after 9 o'clock. Time to begin this morning's panel discussion on topics in the news. Today we're joined by WAMC's Alan Shartok. Good morning.
How'd you do?
Hey, there's your mic. Yeah, there you got it now. And Associate Editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain, you made it.
Good morning.
Isn't there somebody else in the room who should be introduced?
Ah, yes, and let us not neglect the our mangy little cur friend, Murray.
Murray,
here.
The dog.
A celebrity dog.
Celebrity
is with
us dog. Today, yeah. Say hi, Murray.
Woof.
Yeah. Okay.
Woof.
Well, we'll do that old vaudeville routine a little later on.
What's on the roof? What's on it?
Who is the home run king?
Roof.
Right, okay. Well, that's good. All right. Well, the show's over. No, actually. Let's start with Syria and breaking news that we have heard this morning on WAMC. A Syrian strongman, Bashar al-Assad, today accepted a Russian proposal to put his chemical weapons arsenal under international control. Iran and China immediately backed it. President Obama says, well, let's see if they're serious. You have to take it with a grain of salt. At least that's what he told NBC. What do you guys make of this?
Well, Alan, you're the political scientist. Is this a dream come true for a president facing a tough political fight, getting his...
Boy, is it ever.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, in one day, the idea that the country was against this, that he couldn't get the Congress to go along, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he emerges. Now, what we don't know is what's been going on in the background. We see... Mm. A Kerry remark, which has been described by the press as just offhand.
Yes.
Just offhand, you know.
And if it wasn't offhand, he's a hell of an actor. I mean, it seemed very much like, you know, this was a very relaxed
it
sort of...
It came together so fast.
Indeed.
Yeah. Don't you think that it was in the works in some form?
Yeah. I do. I think we don't really know. We're not really sure as a country what our leaders are doing diplomatically. So there are lines out. I've said so, by the way. I'm sure, Ray, even you will credit me with having said for the last several days that there must be furious work going on between the United States and Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And we certainly didn't know about that. But boom. Now, I'll tell you who looks good. Putin looks good.
He looks like he is the chess master.
Right. He's a peacemaker. Putin imagine good. That. The with president, his bare chest.
The president pulls it out, right, Mike?
Right. The president doesn't have to face a vote in Congress where he might have been, disgraced, I guess. Not disgraced, but certainly politically injured.
That's an interesting point, because I think that it may go to a vote. You have those who are in favor of military action, McCain, Lindsey Graham, saying, you know, the only reason Assad is doing this is because the threat of action is over his head. And even I think the administration says, look, we have to press on with this because we're turning the screws on him.
I agree. I think you're right. I think they're going to have to move forward and be positioned to have the vote and trying to make all this happen very quickly. But, I mean, then you get into the whole issue of verification, and that's a difficult thing.
Sure.
You know, what is verification in a case like this?
Well, I don't think there's any question that when the president talks to the nation
tonight at 9 on WAMC.
Right. Another thing, you know, that we try to do here, you know, in a moment's notice, because it's the right thing to do, when he speaks to the nation, he's going to say, you know, I'll bet he says, okay, he's quoting Reagan, trust but verify, and he's going to say, look, if this guy breaks his word, then we do what we said we were going to do. I think he has to say that.
And he keeps the keeps the aircraft carriers close by and everything is on alert. It even has echoes of, you know, the Cuban Missile Crisis.
It does.
Where a lot was going on behind the scene with the U.S. and Russia and a lot of the Soviet Union at the time. There was face-saving efforts underway. People were aware of how others were going to be perceived by this. And it really, you know, only years later did you find out the whole story, which, you know, if it pulls this one from having to be an attack on Syria by the U.S., you know, I'm content to finding out down the road what really happened.
Yeah, and it might, you're right. But of course, it might really, as you remember in the Cuban thing, we took our missiles away from Turkey.
Right. Yeah, it was sort of a separate, unrelated event that happened quietly later on.
We didn't find that out for years.
So the president will speak tonight at 9, and this comes on the heels of a poll this morning, a CNN poll, that suggests that President Obama, he may be partly to blame for the box he's put himself into. The poll finds that only 1 in 5 Americans say they completely understand the president's Syria policy. A little more than half say they somewhat understand. And so the implication of this is that he has not made a very good case to the American public thus far.
You know, again, if this is three-dimensional chess, he's going to look like a genius.
Is he or Putin going to look like a genius?
No, I think it's not either or. I think it's both. I think Putin looks good, as I said before, and I think the president looks good because he was able to put this thing together. And now they've got Hillary Clinton out there saying, be careful now. You know, this guy's slippery, basically.
Hmm. It's easy to say. True.
Yes, but also she's lining up for a presidential run and wants to appear tough. This is a good way to do that. And by the way, Ray, how do you get in touch with us if you want to check in?
I did not say that, and thank you for subtly reminding me. You can join the conversation by emailing us at roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. You can also comment on our webpage or our Facebook page or tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. Is that all good?
That was very good. Okay. And I think your emphasis on emailing us is a very good idea at roundtable@wamc.org.
You like that?
Yeah. That's
You're not
way
so
I
much
would...
for the tweeting.
Nah, you know, I don't understand it all.
Well, you know, it's tough when someone has deep thoughts like yourself to get it into 140 characters of a tweet.
Sure.
You know. So anyway, that's a great spot to take a break. Hey, Hopper, let's take a break, and then we'll switch gears. There are votes going on today around the region, and we'll get the rundown with our learned panel coming up on the roundtable.
Support for WAMC comes from Benson's Pet Center, the Capital Region, and soon Pittsfield, Massachusetts, a pet supply resource offering natural and holistic pet foods, treats, accessories, and more. Benson'sPet.com. Express Pediatrics Highland. Walk-in urgent care for children open Monday through Friday from 5 p.m. to midnight, weekends noon to midnight, this fall offering flu shots. ExpressPediatrics.com. And Elms College, Chicopee, Massachusetts, working to educate students with their core values of faith, community, justice, and excellence. Elms.edu.
Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. 19 minutes after 9 o'clock. Ray Graff here in for Joe Donahue. Alan Chartok here as well. The Times Union's Mike Spain. And it's our discussion, first hour of the program. And there are votes. And the big one, of course, is New York City, the primary. And, you know, someone will succeed Michael Bloomberg. Bill de Blasio has a comfortable lead right now. Obviously, the goal here is to avoid a runoff. And there's also a Republican primary as well. And that may play into a general election. So first, let's start with Alan. What do you think?
What do I think about what?
What do you think about the New York City Democratic mayoral primary?
Will succeed Michael Bloomberg?
It looks pretty obvious. I mean, it looks pretty obvious. Bill de Blasio is going to win. He's going to win big. The question is, does he get 40%?
Well, that's what I said.
Yes, I know. I know. You're so learned, I wanted to repeat what you said.
I see.
And then if you add up the number 2 and number 3, which is Thompson and Quinn, they come out in the latest polling with at least one latest poll, with 1 point which would deny him a clear victory. In other words, they got 40, he's got 39, he needs 40, it really is now a question of who comes out votes.
Can you explain the way that the runoff works? You need 40% or more in order to win the primary wholesale.
That's exactly right.
Face a runoff.
Now I don't have to explain it.
Oh, okay.
Because
well,
you just did it.
But if two other... Right, okay. I see what you mean. So if two other candidates get enough... You got it.
No, yeah, thanks. I thought I was pretty clear.
Is there some acrimony here?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Let me tell you something. We are so lucky to have Mike Spain on with us that the last thing we ever want to do is alienate that guy.
Exactly.
We don't want to make jokes about him.
And Murray, you keep quiet over there as well.
Murray's just looking up with total disdain.
If you're just joining us, Murray the dog is making an appearance here for the first time in a couple of years.
Yeah.
Very nice to have you here, Murray.
I think he's the first time on the roundtable discussion panel.
Oh, yes, that's correct. Yes.
Okay.
Once again, you're right.
Well, you know, he has been brief in his comments, but poignant.
Poignant. Yeah. That's
so the polls are showing that Quinn and Thompson may total above 40%, well, above 60% rather, or, you know, with others taking a couple of percentage points. And de Blasio said today, didn't he, that he expects, or said in the last couple of days, that he does expect that they're going to turn right around and be working on a runoff campaign. I mean, it's got to be in the works.
Yeah. Well, and it is interesting. I mean, I keep trying to put myself in Quinn's place. I mean, here she was during the entire run-up to this election as the person who was supposed to win.
Yeah.
You know, when you act like a winner, you act like a winner. You know, you're defensive when it comes to certain appearances and the rest of it. And then all of a sudden, this guy comes out of nowhere. Now, along comes Bloomberg. I'm a big Mike Bloomberg fan, but he really messes up by, as we mentioned yesterday, by announcing that that de Blasio, because he has a child of color, is a racist.
Yeah, that was a strong...
Well, he wasn't calling him a racist, but saying it was a racist campaign. I think he was drawing a fine line.
Oh, please.
Yeah.
It's one of the stupidest... It's one of the stupidest things that he could have done. And it just shows his frustration. And his police commissioner, Ray Kelly, also a man I much admire, has been keeping the city safe for a long time and working very hard at it, is now blasting all of them clearly on the way out the door and saying you don't care about terrorism. Well, believe me, when somebody gets back into office, they'll have a police chief, if not him, somebody else, who will be advising them, and they'll be doing what they have to do. It was another stupid move, but obviously made out of complete frustration.
Now, we have two Republicans running in a primary, but there are so few, according to the New York Times, so few Republican voters in the city. Polling is considered unreliable. Do either of these guys have a shot at winning the
They
the
both
vote?
Have a shot of winning.
But what do you think the real shot is?
Well, right now, I presume Loda is the front runner, but the billionaire
Katsimatidis,
man who owns Gristetti's grocery stores that are all
we
over
can
the
see.
City.
You're an upstater.
Well,
yeah.
You know what?
We once lived over a Gristetti's, good store.
Yeah, very nice. All right, now Albany, a slam dunk in the mayoral race, Mike.
Well, you know, if you're to believe surveys, it looks like, you know, that there is a there certainly is a front runner in the race for Albany mayor. It's the Democratic primary. And, you know, that's taken for granted. And
how you say it?
Yes.
Oh, so you mean Corey Ellis and and Kathy Sheehan, and Kathy Sheehan is the leader, right?
Right. Kathy Sheehan has been ahead in the polls, but you know, it really is election day in Albany.
Yep.
You know, it's just such an overwhelming Democratic enrollment that the actual election happens in the September primary, and this will be a historic event because it's the first new mayor in 20 years. Jerry Jennings has been mayor for 20 years.
Yep.
It's also historic because either candidate will bring a new face to City Hall. One is a woman and one is an African American. So it does show how much Albany has changed from being the white Democratic Irish Catholic machine that it's been known to be for
thousands
decades.
Of years.
Yes,
yes,
thousands of years. Yes. You know, and it looks like it's going to be a big night for Sheehan.
Albany has always been, sort of classic political machine. I mean, when you think of the great political machines in this country and the last to go, Chicago is right up there.
Yeah.
And Albany is right up there. And, you know, the tricks of the trade go with how you campaign. Do you give your campaigners the necessary assets to assets to go to the polls? Well, I used to work for a congressman. Now, I'm not saying this is here because I don't know.
Okay.
But I used to work for this congressman, and he you know, his campaign workers had what was called walking around money. And it was
the turnout is painfully low. Jordan Carlio Evangelist had a column yesterday about how it's just frustrating to election officials that they only get, you know, just a fraction of the voters. And, you know, that happens in New York City. Only 800,000 are expected to come out, and there's 3.5 million Democrats in New York City, you know, and people are just not participating in the process.
Well, I'm so sorry, Ray, but it shows you when you got a union, for example. Yeah. They're going to count for a lot, the union endorsements, because they tell their people, get out, and they get out.
But doesn't that mean, to some extent, that there's the chance of an upset that no one saw coming if it's such a low turnout expected?
Yeah, isn't there a chance of an upset, said Ray Graff?
Well, it's...
The short answer is?
I don't think today anyone is expecting an upset.
I'll kick you off the show.
Corey Ellis has certainly made a good campaign, and I think he's a young man who's got a political future ahead for him.
He's terrific, yeah.
And Kathy Sheehan, who was really ready to challenge Mayor Jennings in a Democratic primary, which would have been interesting, you know, now is backed by the county organization. So she's sort of an outsider has become an insider.
Do you think that Corey Ellis waited too long somehow to make this, that he sort of peaked too late?
You know, that's an interesting question. You know, maybe if the election were actually in November, maybe it might have a different outcome. But she's...
Well, I don't even mean now. Yeah, I mean that the way...
In his career.
You know, I've often thought...
Oh, I think there's more to come from Corey Ellis. Yeah. I think he's a bright young man. He's got the city. He loves the city. He's got a lot of support in the community. And
campaign headquarters right across the street from here.
Yes, that's right, on Central Avenue.
That's right.
And you would just hope that somebody with that kind of dedication would have a place in city government. And she's going to need all the help she can get. She's facing a huge budget deficit. She's got, you know, if she takes over as mayor, as is expected, you know, she's got a lot of problems that any city in upstate New York would have. And mayors all over upstate New York are going to have challenges when they take office.
Yeah, and another one which is so interesting is am I rushing the growling?
You're talking about Syracuse, and
I am.
We need more time than a
minute. That's
so
an interesting one.
We'll pick that up after the news.
I hope the Cuomo people aren't listening when I have what I have to say.
I don't want to hear what you have to say. You know,
one mention about another local race in the Capital Region.
Yeah,
it's in Saratoga County, where the county sheriff's primary has basically become a referendum for the New York Safe Law, where you have, you know, they're trying to fill a vacancy that's being left by the retiring sheriff who's been there for, you know, James Bowen's been there for like 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
And Gildersleeve is Jeff Gildersleeve is a candidate who's saying that he, if elected, will not enforce the New York Safe Act. So it's an interesting way
now,
to be a referendum on the Safe Act.
His opponent, Michael
Zurlo
of Stillwater, has he said he will enforce?
He hasn't said that he won't enforce it. The assumption is that when you elect a sheriff, they're going to enforce the law.
Yeah. Well, we've heard some interesting comments both on national news and our own regional news about sheriffs who say, you know, we'll enforce
nullifiers.
It, but we're not going to go the extra step.
Mm. Right. One is active and one is passive.
I have to say, this was Andrew Cuomo's greatest moment as far as I'm concerned.
The SAFE Act.
Yep.
All right, sir. You had mentioned Sheehan potentially, you know, running against Jennings. And the backroom politics involved in Jennings suddenly, apparently to us, backing out.
It was a last-minute decision, and he was right before the day when he would have to file.
Mm-hmm. Right. Very interesting. And so it ties in, to some extent, to the topic we'll hit after the news, and that's Stephanie Miner in Syracuse, no great friend of the governor's, who has two primary opponents. And we'll discuss that and maybe speculate on some of the backroom politics there coming up on the Roundtable. I like it. Some minor key bumper music for a dark and stormy day.
It was a dark and stormy night.
On a Tuesday on the Roundtable, Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue, 37 after 9 o'clock. Alan Chartok is here and the Times Union's Mike Spain. And we've been talking about some of the votes today in New York and elsewhere. And one we forgot to mention was the sort of high-profile New York City comptroller's race. And, you know, Spitzer way ahead for a while.
Yeah, we're right out in
front.
Not so much now.
Yeah. What happened, Alan?
Well, let me just put it this way. If you believe the polls.
Ah!
And I've seen some polling in the past that has been really bad.
He's reported to be 7% behind Scott Stringer for the controller
race. Now, Scott Stringer has almost every single public official you could imagine who have lined up for him. So they have,
David Patterson.
They have the bodies out on the street. They can haul people over to the polls. They can do all of that. And Spitzer, of course, has one of the great equalizers. It's called money.
Ah.
And so he hires people, and they can do much as political consultants, and they can do much of the same thing. What's fascinating about this race is that no matter how the polls change, and as I say, I have issues with that, there is a consistency in that the black population in New York is heavily for Spitzer.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that very interesting. I mean, I think they see the sort of way in which there's a ganging up on Spitzer by the political establishment, and we all know why, because if Spitzer gets elected, like it or not,
he'll owe nothing to anybody.
He will not. And B, if his history as, you know, as governor, as attorney general shows us anything, he will go for broke. And that means, you know, he'll have all of these things to vote, these shares to vote from the pension fund. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he will insert himself in the way that some of these companies carry on and are managed,
mm-hmm.
And glass ceilings, you know, and other things. And that's the last thing that these guys want, including, I'm sure, our governor, who does not have a good relationship with Spitzer and hasn't even before the bad stuff
before,
happened.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, Duffy had said, I think yesterday, I read it in the Times Union, I believe, that they'll have no problem working with Spitzer.
Which means they're worried that he's going to win.
Right.
Just
in case.
Which means they're worried that he's going to win. I think this 7 points, you know, I think what's happening is remember that all three newspapers tried to douse Spitzer.
A couple of weeks back.
That's right.
The Daily News and the
Well,
Times.
I think it's the Post has a lead editorial today, or the Daily News, one of them. You know, so they have a lot riding on this because their prestige is not what you might have thought. So I think the Times Union, for example, Mike's here so we can praise them. They're very careful. They use the right kind of language when they do these endorsements. Down in the city with those tabloids, you know, you got these competing millionaires, Zuckerman and Murdoch, and they don't. It's not a healthy kind of considered endorsement process.
Go ahead, Mike.
No, I was just going to say whatever the outcome is tomorrow's of today's primary, tomorrow morning when we know all the results, and tonight, it probably will end all of the discussion. I mean, it won't end all the discussion, but Spitzer will probably have gotten past the automatic phrase "disgraced former governor." Now it'll be, you know, eventually he'll be able to reestablish himself. And if he loses, I guess he goes away. I don't know.
We'll see.
Yeah,
but you make a great point. Now, of course, 7%. 7% is fairly close in a race, and you mentioned this earlier, that there's such a light turnout.
Right. They expect 800,000 people to vote. The city has 3.5 million Democrats. And, you know, that does shift it. He's got a lot of money. He's got a lot of get-out-the-vote people working for him. And there is that sense of an underdog. Everybody's against him. There must be something good about him. They must be afraid of something.
Well, that's been his campaign. Yeah. His campaign has been, "They're out to get me because they know I'm a change agent."
It's funny. Mm. At the bottom of the hour, NPR News, they mentioned the mayoral primary in New York, saying it's one of the most unpredictable of many years. And, you know, on the face of it, de Blasio has 40% right now. And so maybe this Spitzer race, Stringer race, is much, much more unpredictable than even 7% would indicate.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, the only poll that counts, of course, is the one that it's today.
That's what they always say. And has anybody heard the words Anthony Weiner at all lately?
No, I mean, it'll be interesting now, you know, assuming that his numbers are so low that he's not going to make a difference in this race. What will he? It at least gets him out there and sort of gets him past his most recent foibles.
Really?
I don't know.
I don't like him, but I'll tell you something. I admire his staying in the race.
Hmm.
And you may remember, Ray, earlier in the game, I predicted he would stay in because it's really, and everybody else said, oh, no, he'll have to drop out. I didn't think so, because I think if he dropped out, then it would have been a permanent retirement.
I think you're right. I think it's admirable that he stayed in the race and he's doing it to the end. He made a promise that he would run, and he has done that. So,
all right. Yeah. All right, let's shift gears to Central New York now. And Stephanie Miner, mayor of Syracuse, in a primary against Alfonso Davis and Pat Hogan. Three-way Democratic primary there. Interesting in that, maybe not interesting, but Governor Cuomo not endorsing the incumbent Miner, and for reasons which Alan will discuss in a moment. However, he sort of says, well, I don't really do the endorsement thing in these races. However, he did endorse the guy in Buffalo.
Who's going to win?
Yeah.
See, I mean, part of the endorsement process for a lot of these guys is...
pick a winner.
You endorse somebody and they say, see, I did that. But on the Stephanie Miner thing, that's a whole other story. She came out, she had tremendous courage, and she came out and she said that she didn't like his plan that you could borrow to meet some of these obligations that you have. What were they? Pension obligations. She really took him on. Now, we've had her on the Capital Connection. I think the world of her. But I can only tell you that I think it took a lot of guts. She's the appointed chair, co-chair of the Democratic Party of New York State by Cuomo.
Mm.
And I think if there's one thing
one
could say about the Cuomos is, they don't forget.
Hmm. You know how they say, he doesn't get mad, he gets even, they get mad and get even.
I think they don't forget.
Okay. And so would you predict then? Would you be willing to make a prediction for today's?
Yes. I predict she'll win. And is that what you mean?
Yeah.
That kind of prediction?
Yeah.
I predict that she will win because I think that the voters of Syracuse admire spunk.
Well, the polls close at 9 o'clock tonight.
Because the only one that counts is today.
Yes, I've heard that.
All right. Fair enough. And
so will that be a blemish for our governor politically? I guess so.
Oh, I think so. I think it would. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. What, now, why?
Well, because when he says, I'm not going to endorse in that race, that means you got a sitting mayor who is his appointee as the head of the Democratic Party in New York State, and he's not going to endorse her? Please.
Well, he's saying the right things. In a YNN article, he says, you know, my relationship with Buffalo is different. My relationship with this mayor is different. We go back a long way.
And he's got a 63% to 30% lead in the polls in Buffalo. Of course, Stephanie Miner is way ahead in the polls, too. So, I mean,
what are you really saying here, Ray?
I'm saying I'm leaving the speculation to the experts.
I think you're an expert. I know you. I know you like a book. You're going to walk out of here and say, so-and-so, she'll win, lose. I know that off mic.
You
won't do that.
Possibly incorrect, sir.
Possibly.
A vote in Massachusetts today. West Springfield. Springfield Hard Rock Casino referendum is set for today. They want to build a Hard Rock Casino on the Big E Fairgrounds in West Springfield, and we'll see what happens there. I have no way of gauging.
We had a terrific story on that this morning as I was coming in, I was listening to it. What I don't understand, and Ray, if there is one thing you are an expert on, it's casinos.
Oh, I see.
I wanted to know something about this.
Yes.
These companies, there are these three major companies, they've all put millions of dollars on these campaigns to get these things through.
Yeah.
Two of them are going to lose because it can only be one.
Right.
And they'll just move over to New York and start spending money here trying to get the bondish or the constitutional amendment passed this November.
So they have a lot of money is the point.
Mm-hmm. They do. Even in tough times, all they do is they tighten up the slot machines a little bit and it's all even. You know what I'm saying? All right, let's take a short break here, and then we will talk about, we touched on the net neutrality court case yesterday on this program. And today, Alan pointed out an interesting article in the New York Times about Chinese authorities tightening up social media. So, Mr. Hopper, let's take a break. It's the roundtable. We'll be back.
Support for WAMC comes from Dr. Victor Zinus Woodstock, providing holistic dentistry, including tongue assessment, mercury removal, ozone therapy, and saliva testing. 845-657-2322. Taste of New Paltz, 23rd Annual Fall Food and Beer Festival, offering fare from regional restaurants, wineries, farm markets, and craft beer. Sunday, September 15th, Ulster County Fairgrounds, newpaltzchamber.org, or on Facebook. And Performance Automotive, Pittsfield, a European and Saab service center, serving Western Massachusetts and the Greater Albany market for 25 years. Saab, it's not just a car, it's a passion. SaabPerformance.com.
And welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. What are you laughing about, Alan?
I'm laughing at you. You have a funny face.
WAMC, 9:47 is the time. Alan Shartok is here. Murray the dog is here. And the TU's Mike Spain is here. And, you know, Murray has been better behaved than you, Alan.
Oh, some people say, because we're both terriers, you know.
And Murray is not so disagreeable as others.
Oh. No. Ooh.
But I won't say.
I take that as a shot.
I think that was a shot, no. Indeed.
So, it was a compliment to Murray.
Good. His boss, Rex, will be very pleased to hear him take a shot.
All right. And so there was this article in the TU, and it's I think it's via the Associated Press. And I'll read you the beginning here. Chinese authorities have further tightened controls of its social media, warning that people who post comments deemed libelous and that are reposted 500 or more times will face defamation charges and up to 3 years in prison. Judicial authorities have said these rules will apply to people whose posts are viewed by at least 5,000 internet users. They're trying to clamp down on what they call online rumors. Obviously, critics say, you know, you're curbing free speech. Alan, this meant enough to you for you to email it to me late last night or early this morning. So tell us why this bugs you.
Well, first of all, obviously it's China. And obviously the party is going to control everything that they can. Mm. I'm even interested in the fact that they seem to be somewhat careful about how they're positing all of this. In other words, they're saying, okay, this will happen to you if you do this or that. But in the older days, I think, you know, you would have gotten called out in the middle of the night.
Right, dragged away.
I think that.
Well, they have done that, though.
Yeah.
They have rounded up hundreds.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Remember, this is millions of people. Yeah. You know, they're using social media. And how do you rein that in and how do you control that? I mean, it's interesting to watch.
And guess what? They don't like the fact that people come online and say despicable, often despicable, and terrible untruths about them is what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying, hey, what's new? Welcome to the
world.
However, the new world. Yeah.
Now, at times, in fairness, at times you have taken Mike and Rex and others to task for saying, you know, on your comment section of your papers, you allow anything.
That's right.
And so, How do you distinguish that?
First of all, they'll tell you that's not quite true. That they try to moderate their things. Mm-hmm. But
not everybody does moderate their blogs.
No, this is something that drives me
nuts. So how do you do it and not be trapped?
There is no way to do it.
Right. Well, Verizon, as you discussed earlier, made mention to Verizon and other internet providers want to be able to control what goes through their pipes. And, you know, that would be a change from what Congress had supported
net neutrality.
With net neutrality law, which basically makes them the providers and not the gatekeepers of the content. And are they any different than China?
Look, there are some despicable cowards and bad people out there who lie with impunity. They do it again and again and again. They put false names next to their names. It's disgusting. Mm-hmm. And by the way, it is not the whole population. It's a small, hardcore group of guys people who just take advantage of this, and they are the worst kinds of vermin in the whole world.
Yeah, suddenly, they have the ability with their own computer to just spew poison everywhere, where that wasn't the case before the internet.
Well, I would say that we could take what was just said as a fact, and absolutely so. But how does one say, "Hey, nutty, you can't do this," and not end up rounding people up, as has happened with China? Hundreds have been arrested for spreading, quote, online rumors. Now they have a crackdown, a further tightening of the rules, or perhaps a focusing of the rules. So how do you have a happy medium in a free society?
You've got a country over there which is filled with corruption. We know it. people are outing corrupt officials online.
Social media. Yeah.
That's on social media. Mm-hmm. And it is a different problem than we have here. Don't tell me that with the kind, I mean, if I write a letter to the New York Times, I'm going to get a telephone call saying, did you write that letter?
Right? Verification,
If they're going to print it. But most newspapers say, okay, that's good for our letters column, but we're going to do it differently for online, which is where everybody's getting led. And when you say to them, one last thing, Mike, and then go, but if you say to them, how can you do that? You know, how can you just let everybody say anything they want when you're verifying your letters, which is total hypocrisy? The newspaper guys are going to say to you, well, we have to have people coming to our website.
We can talk about that, but that's not the issue that Ray brought up.
No, I mean, not at all. Not China.
Thank you for keeping him in line.
We're all agreeing that the internet provides an easy way for people to, you know, say anything they want, however untrue it is and however vicious it is.
Yeah, in the old days, there were broadcast outlets, and had to get on.
In the U.S., it's a different situation. You know, I think society has to cease to tolerate that, and we have to learn to recognize that and turn it off and filter it out, et cetera, et cetera. But in China, it's a very closed society that's exploding open because of social media. And can they put this toothpaste back in the tube? I mean, it's going to mean massive social change in China. And, you know, it seems to be that they're trying to control it. I can't imagine they can stop it. I mean, I said millions before. We're talking billions, right?
They'll stop some of it.
Yeah. They'll slow it down.
But you want to know what's interesting? Yeah. That the good ones, the ones who are really looking not to do anything but sort of make China better. Those people will keep doing it even if it does mean 3 years in jail. And that always is interesting to me, how people will follow their conscience even though the potential for disaster is so great.
Mm-hmm. I mean, can't libel laws just be used?
Where?
In situations like, anywhere.
Because the libel laws, as you know, in this country are very tough. I mean, if you're Mike or me or you, and we have injected ourselves into the public discourse, it's almost impossible to prove.
But what about now? Where is that line drawn? If you know, Joe, 46-year-old in his mom's basement, is opining and saying libelous things, is he a journalist?
No, but the you know, the laws are it's, you have to, it's a very tough thing to prove. I mean, you get before a jury, you might be able to sway a jury, you know, in a libel case, but they're tough cases.
Of course, you'd have to put about a couple $100,000 into getting the lawyers and doing all this stuff.
There's that angle as well. All right, let's just switch gears here in the last few moments. The happiness scores rose worldwide. This is from USA Today, in the USA, where countries hit hard by economic and political upheaval. U.S. ranks 17th for happiness in a new report. 17th.
I think that's pretty good.
Yeah, you know, that's not so bad.
Out of 156.
Not so bad.
Where was Syria on that list? Where was Iraq on that list?
The lowest ranked were in Africa, Rwanda, Burundi, and Central African Republic.
Who's number
the
one?
Scandinavian countries do very well.
Very
in
happy.
And
there.
I believe have.
It's the fondue, I think, right?
And I believe have among the highest suicide rates in the world.
Well, that'll weed out the discontents.
Well, okay, you can write to Ray Graff at WMC.org, or Graff.
But I'm just saying, this is a silly...
A world happiness report.
And it's from the UN. It's just a silly thing.
Well, the Scandinavian countries also have very low crime. Now, I don't, you know...
The Scandinavian countries are, for, although it's changing a little bit now, have homogeneous populations. In other words, everybody's sort of like everybody else. Now, there's been some real big problems as there's an in-migration to some of these countries.
Right,
But the truth of the matter is, the more everybody's like each other, I think the less dissonance you might have, because we are tribal society.
Oh, interesting.
But what? You could argue
that's an interesting angle.
That for the United States to rank 17 and have so much diversity in rank 17 is quite outstanding. It means that we have managed better than anyone else to handle diversity and tolerance.
Yeah, well, I think we have more TV channels than most, so that'll keep most people happy, right?
That's true, too.
When Honey Boo Boo is on 9 times a day, how can you lose, right?
Who's Honey Boo Boo?
Ah, you don't know Honey Boo Boo. That's another show. Okay, let's switch gears again here quickly in the last 2 minutes. The fun drive comes up 2 weeks from yesterday.
Boy.
We still need some volunteers.
We do. And you can call here, 1-800-323-9262, and ask for Felicia.
Felicia Burke.
Yeah.
And that's extension 189er.
B-E-R-K-E.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Alan, you had a terrific pre-launch on Sunday, it sounds like, in Peekskill. Pete Seeger came out and performed and paid homage to you and homage to the radio station. Does that kind of give you a boost as you go into a fun
well,
drive?
Well, we can only hope. Yeah. I'm always scared to death before every fun drive. People don't know that about me, but I am. I get up at 1:30 in the morning. I begin to worry about what we should do and how we should do it. And then, you know, I've always felt that whatever the great forces in our nature are, it has provided and has brought us through. But, you know, it's going to take everybody. And the one thing I've never been able to understand is how anybody can listen and not do something. How is that justified? I've never known. And by the way, I meet all these people and they say the same thing. You mean people listen and don't give? I said, yes, yeah. A lot.
Hmm. Well, the lockbox is in operation at our website.
Over 100 grand.
WAMC.org. And I haven't checked the totals today, but I think it was about 107 yesterday.
Yeah.
And we love to fill that lockbox. It all counts on day one of the drive. You can go make a secure online pledge right now if you wish.
And you could say, Alan told me to do this. I'm with you, Alan, and I appreciate this. I appreciate it because I'm doing my part.
Now, you had mentioned you get up, you get nervous, and you do. I mean, yeah. Literally, visibly nervous in the weeks leading up to a fun drive, but you get up at 1:30 when you get nervous. You get up at 3 o'clock when you're not nervous.
No, not a lot of difference there.
No, not really.
Lost nighttime sleep.
There's this hour in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people have it. I think I read a piece in the Times about this hour in which people... all of the stuff is coming to your head and you're sort of sorting it out.
Yep. Mm. Sure.
Well, Alan, can you give us a hint of what might be offered as a benefit for making a contribution?
Oh, boy.
Will there be any CDs that came out of some recent event?
You might get a CD of this wonderful Peak concert.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Or maybe even two.
So breaking news. All right. Well, on that
you might, note, I said. I didn't say you would.
Okay. All right. We won't hold you to it.
Details.
You know, on that happy note, we will end this hour of the program. I want to thank Mike Spain of the Times Union. You were wonderful as always. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Alan, you were here as well, and I appreciate that very much.
He was wonderful, but I was here.
You can always email us at roundtable@wamc.org. Coming up, something.